Today we are talking with David Taylor Klaus. David is a world-class coach, author, and entrepreneur. He helps senior executives and entrepreneurs achieve success without sacrificing their relationships with their families and friends. I am your host, Zachary Alexander, subscription service designer at subscriptionmaker.net. Please hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast so that you won't miss any new episodes. The reason we are talking with David is because all of the turmoil can distract us from maintaining the key relationships that sustain us in both good times and bad. So we are talking with an expert at making relationships work. David, welcome to the Subscription Maker Podcast.
And a pleasure to be here this morning. Thanks, Zachary.
Tell us a little bit about your company, DTK Coaching.
Yeah, DTK Coaching is, you know, when I talk about my work, I like to say that I reintroduce successful entrepreneurs and senior executives to their families. So DTK Coaching is just a container for that work. I do one-to-one coaching with leaders, whether they're entrepreneurs or executives. It's really, the only real difference is tie-dye versus bow tie. And I work with the teams that they lead. So that's the extent of my practice. I keep it very focused.
What do you mean by reintroducing entrepreneurs to their families?
You know, I use that, and I have for a very long time, because I get a pretty broad range of reactions. I do get people saying, oh, that sounds weird, no thank you. I get a lot of, oh my God, I know so many people that you need to talk to. And then I get a ton of people that say, oh my God, that's me. Now, the people who are saying that don't always have children and aren't always entrepreneurs, but they all understand over-calibration. They've gotten off kilter. They're too focused on or too enmeshed in and too immersed in their work. And they've lost connection to everything else that's important in their life. And so this is about getting into a rhythm that works.
When did you start it?
I started coaching 12 years ago. And it's interesting, my wife, who's always a year ahead of me, had become a coach and started a company called Touchstone Coaching. And for the first half dozen years, she and I were in a business together. The challenge was we were doing the exact same work, but with wildly different audiences. So that first pivot was, she launched a brand called Impact ADHD, which is working with parents of kids with complex needs. And I spun out DTK Coaching, which let me work with the entrepreneurs and the executives.
What kind of services do you offer?
Predominantly one-to-one coaching. And I noticed a number of years ago that as I did the one-to-one coaching, as leaders began to shift their internal culture, after a period of time, they would look over their shoulder and realize, oh no, everything that was my internal culture is the team's culture. Can we do something there? And so it was a natural cascade to add in team coaching. And for the last 6 years, that's been a remarkable addition to the practice.
Do you have any subscription services?
No, and I was really thrilled when we first connected about this, because this is a conversation I've been having with my team for about 3 years. And it's one of those, you know, when you have this nagging idea that it's something that's necessary, and not because I've had so many clients say, oh my God, I want a coach in my pocket, but because there's something about reaching and serving a broader community. And so this has been a painfully current discussion with my team. So there's more for us to talk about, Zachary.
Absolutely. How do you compete with larger, more established companies?
I don't. The larger established companies, there are not a lot of larger established coaching companies per se. There are practices that have a number of coaches. When you get into the larger companies, there are companies that do other things and also have coaching.
Yeah, I was thinking about someone like Gallup or something like that.
Yeah, so I don't compete with them. I partner with folks like that. So for instance, Gallup has coaches because they have Gallup StrengthFinder, and I'll bring in a StrengthFinder coach when I have an organization that I'm coaching within that uses that tool. So I don't compete with them. I tend to play very instrument agnostic. Because when I, for instance, when I'm coaching at AT&T, they have the instruments that they use. And if I walk in and say, no, I'm going to use only the tools that I have, then that's not a very elegant way to partner with a client. So I don't foist my preferences on top of, I'll use whatever instruments they have. And if I need to bring in another coach or consultant, I do. There's so many folk who want coaching. There's plenty of room for co-opetition.
Now we know that you, you've had to pivot your company. So what was that process like for you?
Which time?
Okay. Name one. Go for it.
So I started the company in, I started coaching in 2008, right in the middle of the financial readjustment that we were having in this country. So my first year, I was being hired as either a business coach or a life coach, because I fell for the idea when a client says, no, 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 I only want to work on my business, or, oh, no, 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 I only want to work on my personal world, that you could keep a Chinese firewall there. It doesn't work that way, right? And I realized that I had to take a stand for what I knew the clients needed. I'm not a fan of sell them what they want and give them what they need. It's sell them what they need. Right. And so the coaching that I did, I took a stand for coaching the whole human, which is work and business, work and life, because there's no new behavior on either side. If you see the pattern in one place, it's going to show up in the other. So it's great to be able to see the full expanse of how they show up in the world. That was the first huge pivot, because it meant walking away from a number of clients and saying, no, this isn't for me.
Who do you talk to when you want to, or when you're considering a pivot?
Now or for the last, I mean, for the first 10 years of my business?
In general.
The problem is, for the first 10 years of my business, I fell back into that perverse trap that we have, which is, if it's hard, it's better. If I have to slay the dragon, the victory is sweeter. And I it was very isolating. I tended to do a lot of that on my own. And even when I reached out to my team or colleagues or my wife, still, I was keeping so much of that pivot discussion and the fear that's wrapped around it internal. Started working with a new coach a couple of years ago, and that made a huge difference, because I'm part of a, not just with the coach that I have, but also the community we're part of. That's a place to bring pivot. And by the way, this is even after having been in Vistage for 15 years, which is a peer community. You've, as an entrepreneur or an executive, you've got to have a community that you can bring this stuff to. Otherwise, it just festers.
What was the best advice you ever received about coaching or pivoting?
It was the worst advice, which became the best advice. The worst advice I got was right at the beginning. All the major coaching training programs tell you the same thing. Coach anybody. Just go out there and coach. That's terrible advice. Because I've watched so many coaches. I've been a mentor coach for 9 years now. I've seen so many coaches who go through training and certification coaching anybody. And they end up with a book of business that when they get done with their certification hours and they get everything done, they're like, ew, I don't really like coaching. Or I don't like these folk that I'm serving. And I'm making it dramatic on purpose, but that's a serious problem. What the best advice turned out to be, take the time to figure out who you want to serve and only coach them. Build your practice more slowly, coaching people that inspire you and that you love. That's the best advice for coaching.
Now let's ask, how about pivoting? What was the best advice you ever received about pivoting?
Shut up and do it. Right? It's I can perseverate on anything. And the idea that done beats perfect is the best advice for a pivot. When you feel that it's time, shut up and do it.
Along the same lines, how do you know when to pivot a business versus when to start a new one?
Whoa. Yeah, I read The Dip. Was that Seth Godin?
Yes.
About 15, 16 years ago. I wish I had a brilliant answer for that. I really do. How do you know? Okay, I want to answer that by giving a distinction on knowing. Yeah. That's not something you figure out. That's something you feel out. And I know that my friends in the VC community will say, no, 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 it's all data. You can figure it out. No, you can't. I think that the best answer to that comes from feeling it out. Go with your gut.
Let's shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
I know both you and your wife are authors and entrepreneurs. Do you want your children to follow in your footsteps?
That's a brilliant question. And my gut says yes, and. You know, we're all ADHD, all five of us. And I learned a long time ago that ADHD people do better working for themselves. I think it's because we all got fired so many times. We do much better working for ourselves. But I think it has to do with, I want my children to be able to control and create the life that they want to live. And entrepreneurs have a much better shot at doing that. And I have one that's in film and television and has been for 10 years. I have one that's on their way to medical school and one that's still in college. The one in college is figuring stuff out as he goes anyway. So yeah, I want them, more than being an entrepreneur or not, to be able to create the life that they want to live.
Yeah, and the reason I bring that up is the bigger question is, how do you pass down entrepreneurship or the entrepreneur prowess or the skills? How do you pass that down to the next generation?
It's a thinking style. And this is something I've shared with my kids. The idea that the difference between a manager and an entrepreneur, a manager is given a goal and their job is to manage the execution of the plans to create the highest likelihood that goal will be achieved. Fair?
Fair.
An entrepreneur decides what she wants to be true and then sets about creating the conditions for that truth to become reality. That's the thinking that I want from my children. And whether they do that within the structure of somebody else's business or organization or their own, that's the thinking. And that you can pass down.
We've talked about the fact that you work with both entrepreneurs and senior execs.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges do you find working with large organizations?
The knee-jerk response to that is HR. And I mean that with no disrespect to the more human-focused, you know, talent-focused version now. There's an old-school version of HR where their reason for existence is to keep employees from touching the third rail, from going to the places that create vulnerability and transparency, personally. And that's the very thing that coaches lead their clients to do. So understandably, there's a natural mismatch. When I go in to work with an organization, I always go in through the leader. Because when the leader says, oh, HR, by the way, this is the coach that I'm going to be working with, who's going to be working with the team, HR says, awesome, not my decision, not my problem, I'll support it, right? Because they don't want to get fired. And I totally appreciate that. But if I come into HR, it's like, no. Because they've got to protect the systems and the structures they know. They'd rather have a coach internally or grow one. There are a number of ways that old style HR works, and coaching doesn't always jive with it. The newer organizations, the newer style HR is incredible. They really do function with the idea from senior executive level down, the idea that humans are the greatest resource within an organization, and they're willing to stretch around that. That's different.
So how do you get the attention of large organizations?
I don't. I get the attention of the leaders.
Okay.
Yeah, Simon Sinek said that people want to do business with people who believe what they believe. And I think that the best way for people to know what you believe is to write about it and speak about it. And as I am in front of those people, they make the decision to connect. We have a conversation. If it sounds like it's something we want to explore, we explore it. But I don't pitch to organizations. I got enough going on, and I got enough people to serve. So I tend to go through the individual.
What's it like working? What kind of challenges do you find with working with small and entrepreneurial companies?
Attention. People are, in general, and this is even before the pandemic, people are time poor and attention poor. We just don't have enough of any of it. And getting somebody's attention and maintaining it can be a challenge. So when you're looking at entrepreneurs in high growth mode, in particular, getting their attention and maintaining it is difficult. They have more initiatives than they can name. And then bringing in, you know, to grow your company, grow your people, you grow yourself. that adds a whole nother layer of energy expenditure as well. So getting and maintaining attention, even when they're incredibly motivated by the work, is the primary challenge.
We've talked about you being agnostic about tools, but I want to ask, do you use the same tools with large organizations versus small entrepreneurial organizations?
There are some tools that I use with the larger companies. What's nice is, for instance, Team Coaching International has a suite of tools. The primary is the team diagnostic assessment. Imagine it's like a team taking a selfie. There are no such thing as individual results. It's only team view, which is great. Now, for the larger organizations, we can roll that up to the Team 360, which takes all the other players involved in that team, or team organization view, where you get the entire organization assessed. For the smallest of companies, I'll use Team Leader View, which is just the leader sort of taking a picture of their team through the window. It allows them to have a view of the impact of their leadership. All of these tools are a way to unpack and reflect the system back to itself. So when I've got a suite of tools like that I can use, brilliant. Then there are tons of other assessments that it depends on whether you're using individual or broad. Because I coach the leaders and the teams they use, there are not a lot of tools I can't use up and down the scale.
Along the same lines, could you tell us a little bit about what you mean by play and how you use that as a tool?
Oh my God, people got enough energy being consumed by work. The first email that goes out when a new client signs on, it says, "Welcome to the coaching playground." And I use language around play a lot, because if I ask you, "Hey, what are we going to work on today?" It sets an energy, it sets a tone. It's amazing how much people lay on when it's work, how much less willing to experiment or make mistakes. When we say, "Hey, what do you want to play with today?" It's an entirely different energy. It's amazing how much deeper and more real people will go when it's play. Experimentation is a manifestation of play. And if people aren't willing to experiment, how do they grow? So play is important. Not only that, I mean, you see in every team building exercise and every offsite you've ever been to, play is embedded naturally. There's millions of dollars invested in by the moment in gamification on your devices. Play is an essential way to increase engagement. And we can either pretend that it still work, or we can actually embrace the play aspect of it. I embrace the play.
You also use quotes a lot as tools, you know, quotes like words create worlds by Judith Glaser. Would you talk a little bit about how that works for you?
Yeah. One of the things I like about Judith Glaser's work, her body of work is called conversational intelligence. One of the things that surfaced for me out of that body of work is we confuse common language for common understanding all the time. And yet, language is a great shorthand. And so when we can draw from cultural and historical lexicon to bring ideas forward in a familiar way, it's a great shorthand for getting into a conversation. And quotes have become a great medium, a great lever for that. My business cards have 50 different quotes on the back. Each card has a different one. And so this has been part of, you know, a tool that I have used from the beginning. In fact, you know, clients, I give a deck of cards so they can pull one every morning for a month. And each morning they've got a quote as a little primer, a way to think that day. It's a mindset shift. So these are anything that's an interesting and easily accessible, readily employable tool to shift mindset, I'm game.
As we start to wrap up, is there a question you wish more people would ask you?
Would ask me? Yeah. I wish more people would say out loud, "Why am I making this so hard?" I think that's the, if I had asked that earlier along, it would have changed my arc as an entrepreneur. And I think that self-awareness is the one question an entrepreneur can ask, is why am I making this so hard? It would change their experience dramatically. the understanding that the only thing that's standing between you and what you want to create is you, that's fuel for an entrepreneur. So, and I think that also, back to the topic at hand, that's access to pivot. Why am I making this so hard? What would it look like if it were easy? Where's the pivot that moves me towards easy? Yeah. Why am I making it so hard? That would be a brilliant question that I wish more people would ask.
I know you and your wife recently both released books on the same day. Are you planning any new offerings you can talk about?
Well, I'll tell you, we're never going to launch two books on the same day again. That was insane. It was fun. It was crazy. Yeah, I'm doing some internal programming for organizations that are buying the books for their teams. Then I'm going to do internal programming for them, a chance to have a year long with a team week by week. I'll check in with them. I'll work with them each month, but every week they'll be moving through a chapter that enables them to rewire their thinking. And that people have been very excited about, which has me really excited. And beyond that, I'm looking at, in first quarter, launching a small group program for entrepreneurs that want quick acceleration. And not by getting better at doing what they do, but focusing on getting better at being who they be, who they are at their core. So it's a now, it's a mindset focus.
I feel remiss now. Tell us about the book.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. The book is Mindset Mondays with DTK. It's 52 ways to rewire your thinking and transform your life. And what I've done is I have a live broadcast that I do every Monday morning, 10 to 15 minutes to start your week. And it's taking one of the quotes of the million quotes that I've collected from an array of sources. And it's a brief conversation with the folks that are there for the live chat to really play with, here's a mindset, here's how it shows up in life and leadership, how will you use it this week? And what I've done with the book is given 52 chapters, one a week for the year, to allow you, through the prompts and the rewire framework I've built in that chapter, and each chapter, to allow you to take the learning from the book and make it real in your world. And this is not a tome. This is not, you know, 60-page chapters that you have to slog through. This is designed readily accessible, immediately actionable, 1,000-word chapters that you can plow through and actually create meaningful change in your world.
What's the best way to keep in touch with you on social media?
I am active on social media. So you can find me on Twitter at DTK. David Taylor Klaus, DTK, on Facebook at DTK Coaching or LinkedIn at David Taylor Klaus. All of those links are available at dtkcoaching.com on my website. And the book is at mindsetmondayswithdtk.com.
David, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Subscription Maker Podcast.
Zachary, it was a joy to be here. Thanks.
This is your host, Zachary Alexander, subscription service designer at thesubscriptionmaker.net. Please join us next time as we talk about what it takes to be a successful subscription maker.